Welcome to Fast Cars, Fast Girls. I'm Abby Meyer. I'll be your host. And joining me for the first official time as my official new co-host, we've got Mike Knapp from 15 Days in May. Welcome, Mike. Happy to have you as part of the team.
Yeah, thanks. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. And we never run out of things to talk about, so it should be an exciting season.
Well, yeah, get ready for some long shows. So they're yeah. they're going to be the perfect types of shows to listen probably when you're driving to, you know, one of those races
that
are a couple hours away. You can cue us up and binge us a little bit, and we can take you all the way there.
Absolutely. And if you haven't noticed, if you haven't been on the website recently, Mike has already written a couple of blogs, and he will continue to do so. So if you're more of a reader than a listener, make sure you check that out, www.fastcarsfastgirls.com. So we got all kinds of things to talk about. We're recording here at the JW on Content Day for IndyCar. What do you want to start with, Mike?
Just how great it is to be talking racing again. I mean, as short of a season as IndyCar is now, things finish up in early to mid-October, and here we are in January, and we're still 2 months away from the first race. Mm-hmm. So it's good to just get together and talk some racing and get a little idea what to look for this year, and start getting used to seeing different drivers and different looking fire suits between all the driver movement, between all the sponsor movement. People are gonna
look a little different.
Look a little
this year.
Different. I think the biggest one might be Alex Palou moving from red, white, and blue for the American Legion to the bright yellow and red trim of DHL.
That was a little trippy yesterday to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you see Felix Rosenquist moving from papaya to pink, going to Meyer Shank. So there's quite a different shift in where everybody's going this year, and I think it's going to shift the dynamics of some of the teams. And Some might be a good thing. Some might be a bad thing. There's actually one team that I think, and we can get to it in a minute, that I think is going to be it's going to be a good thing. So, but it just remains to be seen. A lot of conversation about from the drivers about Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Which will be interesting because you only have a couple people who have raced there in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Will Power's raced there. Scott Dixon's raced there. Joseph Newgarden's race there. Besides that, I'm not sure who else. So
yeah, just a handful.
Yeah, so I'm sure they'll get a test and everything, but testing probably doesn't give you enough time to really get settled in. So watching them on the fly and then racing twice that weekend is going to be interesting. And of course, talking about the hybrid, which I know nothing about. I've got to read up about it. I've heard some of the drivers talk about it. I think they're happy to be waiting to do that till after the Indy 500. But the guys, Cal Kirkwood was the guy who mentioned he's had a lot of testing time with it, and he likes it. There are some drivers like a Tom Blomqvist who has driven those types of cars and endurance racing and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see once that comes into play, how it's going to change the course of the season. I mean,
And how much effect it has on the drivers and their racecraft.
Yeah, because Will Power said just how much, like, when you, whatever it is, you're hitting a button. Like I said, I've got to get the Hybrid 101 book out, or Hybrids for Dummies, because I know nothing about them. Matter of fact, I was in Europe back in October, and we had a hybrid, and I didn't even know what the thing was doing while I was driving it, because I look at these gauges, and I'd take my foot off the gas, and then you'd see this one gauge start to go up, and then I put my foot on the gas, and the gauge goes back down, and then, you know, I could have plugged it in, but I didn't have to plug it in. So Hybrids for Dummies is where I've got to start. So I hope I'm up to speed then, but the guys who have driven it said that, especially coming off, like Will Power said, coming off corners, you know, when you hit that hybrid button. And actually, I was really surprised to learn, and this will be interesting to see what it does at Indianapolis, but I guess they had to take, for the weight for the hybrid, they had to take some weight off the car. Mm. So the car actually going into pre-hybrid, the car's lighter.
Yeah.
So what that means when we get to Indianapolis, and if it adds any, you know, speed to the speed chart, remains to be seen. But
if it adds any flight to people's attempts, little less weight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Will said it's not like you're taking 100 pounds off the car, but there is some weight coming off. So, you know, we'll see, especially when they dial up the boost for Fast Friday and for qualifying, seeing if that, you know, becomes exponential when it leads to speed. So, like I said, I'm interested in learning more about it and just seeing what ends up happening as the season goes on. I think some drivers think that you've got to get a grasp on it pretty quickly, but you know, again, another thing Kyle Kirkwood said is that it's a joint project between the two manufacturers, so everybody's getting information. It's not like certain teams are going to get the information, the rest of you guys got to figure out for yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully that gets everybody on an equal footing. But at the same time, he said, if you're a championship contender and something happens when you switch to a hybrid, that's just going to be a bad excuse. So, you know, it just remains to be seen. I think it deals a lot with the comfort level of everybody and their experience with it to see
absolutely
how that's going to help them.
Well, and, you know, drivers like Will Power and Scott Dixon are always listed as the most adaptable drivers. They do the best on new courses. They do the best with new equipment just because they go with the flow. And so I think that that's going to make a huge difference, is just the driver's general personalities as far as how well and how quickly they can adapt to that change.
Yeah, because adaptability is going to be the big part, because you know, some of these,
you know, a big change is coming mid-season.
But some people, judging by their personalities, don't handle change well.
Yeah.
So we'll see what that means, but it'll be, once that comes around, that'll be a very interesting storyline, especially once it gets to the ovals and the short tracks that are on the schedule the rest of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So, you know, talking about the team dynamics, I mean, what team kind of intrigues you for 2024?
So I've got a cheat sheet pulled up. You know, I'm intrigued by Rahal Letterman-Lanigan because I feel like Lundgaard had some pretty awesome flashes of brilliance last season. And I'm intrigued to see what Pietro does with more time in IndyCar.
Because
His season was supposed to be his rookie season. He ended up breaking his foot or his leg or something.
Yeah, he broke something. He couldn't drive.
Yeah, couldn't drive. Broke something on a lower limb.
Yeah.
Some sort of lower limb fracture. I don't know.
Yeah.
I went in nurse mode when that happened. So
exactly.
But anyhow, so he didn't really get the time in the car that he would have. So I'm interested to see how he does with more time in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, because he's driven other things since then, I feel like he's going to have interesting feedback for the team.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would really enjoy seeing that team do well. I mean, they're just kind of one of those stable teams. And,
right.
You know, and I love seeing a team that's not, you know, Andretti or Penske. Ganassi, yeah, kind of dominate. So I would love to see them get some more wins.
Well, that was one great story last year, is seeing Lundgaard win in Toronto and then just seeing, you know, them recover from the train wreck that was May.
Yes.
And just to see how they, you know, that can wreck a team.
And they rolled with the punches. And yeah. They were hard punches.
Yeah. Last year. Absolutely. And they were able to rebound from that. And
honestly, even Graham Rahal, like, I mean, obviously, you know, he was upset. He was tearful, you know, but, like, he didn't lose his composure. He didn't lose his cool. I mean, he was a complete class act
right.
that day. I mean, you could tell he's disappointed, obviously.
Right.
And in fact, the longer I do this, the more I know the drivers, the more I hate bump day.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I know how it feels for me, and I'm not even directly involved.
Yeah. It just goes to show the level of respect I have for those guys because, and of course, you know, growing up as a sports dad and, you know, seeing my own kids participate in sports, it's like, I think it's harder to watch than it is to play.
Yeah.
But I still think that it's still very difficult when you're under that much pressure to perform. And to be honest, I don't know how they do it sometimes.
Yeah.
And to then to, you know, and also give Graham credit. I mean, he shook off that disappointment and, you know, because of circumstances, he was able to still drive in the Indy 500, and he still drove very well for a team he'd never driven for, a manufacturer he'd never driven with, given his dad's longtime relationship with Honda. So I think all those situations, revitalized the team. And, you know, Graham should have won at the Indy GP.
Yeah.
I thought he had a good chance there. You know, a couple of pit screw-ups, I think, cost him at Mid-Ohio. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, when you look at a team for this year that was getting close to almost being there last year.
Yeah.
They're the team.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Another team I'm very interested to watch is Junkos-Hollinger.
Mm-hmm.
Augustin Canapino, I love him. His fans are wild.
Yeah.
They are fucking wild. don't expect them to be any chilled out this year.
Right.
I'm sure that's not going to change.
Well, all you got to do is just see if he raced there, you know, since the season ended, he's raced down there a couple times. And I mean, just when you see video, when you see clips of.
Oh, they go apeshit.
Yeah, what it's
they
like.
Love him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like a national hero.
Well, and it's just if you go to sporting events in other countries and stuff like that, yeah, it's a different vibe and the passion that the fans, you know, have in other countries.
And they're very much about supporting their countrymen.
Right.
And women.
Right.
And so, you know, it's like they're hardcore Canapino IndyCar fans because they're Argentinian and he's Argentinian, and that's what you do.
Yeah. And the other thing that
I enjoy that. I mean, well, the same with TK. Like, he's, you know, has a shit ton of Brazilian fans because he's from Brazil. And I just, we don't necessarily have that.
Well, it's hard for us to grasp just because of the way our, like, sports are and the way our fandom is and everything like that. We can't grasp the idea of a national hero.
No, I think it's more like when people like a player because they went to their alma mater. That's about the closest.
Or they play for your favorite team, or they're but
that's about the closest. Or like, you know, Larry Bird is from Indiana, and everybody in Indiana is proud of the fact that Larry Bird's from here. You know,
right.
We even joke that our state bird is Larry.
Yeah.
But I think that's about as close as we come, you know, in the United States to that level of supporting somebody just because they came from the same place as you.
Yeah, and especially you look at Argentinians and their passion for all sports. I mean, especially soccer and Messi. I mean, is a god there, and so we don't really grasp a couple of things about that. We don't grasp national heroes, and we don't grasp the pride and pressure that those drivers or athletes feel to perform.
I mean,
Canapino wants to perform well for his team and for his owner and for everybody else on the team, but he also wants to, you know, perform well for Argentina. And that's, you know, and he wants them to be proud of him. And I asked him yesterday, you know.
It's almost like an Olympic level pride.
That's, yeah.
But for every sporting event.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to say it. Yeah, I mean,
because we do that, yeah, as a country for the Olympics. Like, we're all USA, but, yeah.
But when somebody, yeah, but when you have, like, you know, they used to do this here, you know, in the U.S., but it's like, you know, if somebody from Argentina wins a gold medal, they have a massive parade and everything is, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and like you said, it's kind of centralized. Like, if somebody from Indianapolis wins a gold medal in the Olympics, Indianapolis is going to be excited about it.
Yeah.
Of course, or Chicago.
We're going to have a whole ceremony for them. They're going to get invited back. There's going to be a press conference. It'll be a whole thing.
Yeah, but a parade with a million people lining the streets isn't going to happen. But,
no.
But, you know, I mean, it, let's just be facetious for a minute. But, I mean, if, you know, Canepino were to win the Indy 500, I mean, the reception in his home country would be off the, it would be absolutely off the chain.
Oh,
you know,
completely out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be like when you see old videos of people screaming and fainting at Elvis shows. Like,
yeah.
That's, but I imagine that would just be everywhere.
Yeah. Or even in a smaller scale, when, you know, Checo was on the podium a couple of years ago at the Grand Prix in Mexico. And
yes.
Just, you know, they just lost their minds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, which does, you know, there were some other conversations about, like, going to, you know, other countries to race. And I think that would be, you know, I'm for it, of course, but also
yeah.
I just think it would just be cool for those fans to that level of fandom to experience.
To be able to see it locally.
What we do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that,
because we are very lucky that since it is a U.S.-based series, almost all the races are in the U.S.
Yeah, and we're also lucky that the, you know, biggest race in the world is about 5 or 6 miles from here. So I mean,
right,
I've ran there and
yeah.
back in the Indy Mini, so I'm very familiar with how far it is.
Yes,
but in a car, it's not that far. So you know, yeah, we kind of have an idea of how special an environment can be, but you know, when you talk about that stuff, you're just ramping it up.
Yeah,
another 20 degrees.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel the same way. We talked about this a little bit earlier. I feel the same way with the race in Mexico. You know, Pato's got such a huge following, and that's a place, you know, people go to Mexico all the time.
Yeah.
People are comfortable with going to Mexico. They're used to going to Mexico. It's like our Toronto race, and
yeah.
depending on where you have it in Mexico. You know, you could get people that are just driving over the border that, you know, like we do, like the Americans that go to the Toronto race.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like there's a lot more, like, driving commuters than there are people that are flying into Toronto from around the country.
You know? Yeah.
Just in general, our fandom kind of, I feel like we all kind of live Midwesternly in the fact that we drive places more often than we fly places.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I tell people the last couple of years I've driven to Texas, you know, for the race, they're like, why did you drive there? I'm like, it's only 14 hours. It's no big deal. You know, which, by the way, you know, yeah, some of the longer races you go to, like we said at the start, you guys will be able to, you know, like the, what is it to Barber from here? Like 6-7 hours.
Yeah, that's not
bad. You can get 3-4 episodes in on that trip. So,
yeah,
you'd
be good to go.
Yeah, or well, not this year, but next year if you go to the Rolex, just queue us up and.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
Of course, at some point during the season, that might only be like worth 2 episodes. But the way we get going, but
probably not. Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, but yeah, so Junkos Hollinger, I'm also very interested because they've got Romain Grosjean this
right.
year. He's back.
Yeah.
He ain't going anywhere.
Hopefully, I don't know.
I'll tell you what I find what's interesting is that Ricardo Junkos seems to me to be an owner that really does not like you to fuck up your car.
Yeah.
Like, he would like to spend as little money as possible replacing parts on your car.
Right. Because he doesn't have, I mean, you
exactly.
know, both guys came in here with empty fire suits.
Yeah.
Yesterday. So, yeah, there's not a lot of money being thrown around.
No, they're a smaller team. I love them. But Molly and I used to always joke that, you know, after any kind of crash with a Junco's car, that Ricardo was out there with a metal detector being like, get that screw, get that bolt, we'll reuse that, I'll bang that back straight, nope, we'll take that too.
Yeah.
And so he's got two drivers who tend to get caught up in a lot of bullshit.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that's going to go. I think there might be some tense team meetings on that team this year.
Yeah. I think... one thing that Colton Herter brought up that was really interesting today, because he somebody asked him about Sebastian Weldon, and he said, yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I talked to him a lot, and he said, you know, one thing I learned is that when you screw something up, it's your fault. And he goes, even if you know, another driver hits you, he says, think about what you did a couple corners previously. Did, you know, you give him enough room to get a run on you? Did you do this? Did you do that? In the end, you know, you have to take responsibility for yourself. And that's unfortunately one thing that Grosjean probably needs to do a little bit better, a lot better job at.
Yeah, you know? He does not like to take responsibility. He very much likes to play the blame game.
Yeah, and it's not just on other drivers in wrecks. I mean, I was in the pits in a lot of occasions where he was, you know, stomping away pissed off at his crew, you know, and it's like, okay, it's one thing to be demanding and to have high standards if you're running up front and you're winning races, but when you're tearing up seven figures worth of cars,
you don't get to act like a prima donna.
Yeah, you don't get to act that way. You should just be happy that you're still here and that people are, you know, saying that yeah, you know, maybe when you finally find your sweet spot, you'll start winning races, because no doubt he's talented. I mean, you don't last in Formula One for as long as he did without being talented,
absolutely.
But the fact is, the guy still hasn't won a race in over 10 years, if you go back to Formula One and IndyCar, so... you know, his act will wear just as thin and maybe even quicker at Junco's than it did at Andretti. So
absolutely.
You know, so that'll be definitely an interesting dynamic that'll be on that team.
Well, you know, it's just one of those things about, to me, it's a mark of maturity. You know, when I hear how drivers interact with their team and, you know, whether they take responsibility or not.
Right.
Because, like, you know, you talk about the guys that are running up front, like Scott Dixon. Anytime they don't win or it's close or whatever, the first thing Scott does on his radio is thanks everybody and he apologizes for not winning.
Right.
Whether it's his fault or not, you know? Granted, they don't really mess up their pit stops, but, like, you know, they could have jacked up every single pit stop the entire day, and he would never come over the radio and say, we could have won if he hadn't messed up the pit stops.
Right.
He's going to apologize and say, we were really close, wish I could have got him, sorry guys, that's on me.
But that's why he's been with one team his entire career, and, you know, listening to his teammates talk over the last 2 days, just about how great of a teammate he is.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in this series talks about how he sets the standard from, you know, his workout routine, from his, you know, to his racecraft, to how he is as a teammate. Matter of fact, who was it brought up the fact that, you know, even just how noticing the difference in, maybe it was one of the drivers got, I forget which one, that was talking about getting married and saying just, oh, it was Felix, that he's actually completely all in terms of IndyCar and in terms of living here, and he's getting married soon. And he said, you know, because you really find stability and that helps, you know, when you've gone all in. And he goes, then you have, you know, he brought up Scott and his wife and their relationship, and he's like, you know, when you've got your house settled, when you got your visa issues settled, when you know, you're in a great relationship, you know, everything just seems to work better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Scott is the standard for this sport, and I think some of the drivers that you know, have shortcomings, whether it is in their personality, whether it is in their attitude, or need to pay attention to what he does, or needs to pay more attention to what he does, because, you know, all the guys that I've seen talk about him said, you know, he's so open as a teammate. He has no problem giving you information. And, of course, part of that is he's better than you. So,
yeah. You know, he's not going to hoard information. He's not going to be a gatekeeper on information, because he's like, I'll happily give it to you.
Because I'll still beat you. Yeah. So, you know, he's really kind of the standard bearer. And you know, regardless of how long you've been in this sport.
But I think that speaks a lot to his maturity as far as how he handles the fact that he's a, you know, multi-champion, multi-race winner. You know, he's up there with race wins with some of the greatest drivers we've ever had. And he could 100% be all those things and be a dick to new drivers.
Yeah.
And not be good at sharing information or at helping out other drivers, etc. But, you know, that's not how he's chosen to live his life. And I feel like that says a lot about who he is as a person.
Well, and I think what's great over the last, and you see a lot of, you know, well-known drivers that are like so focused early in their career and trying to get momentum and trying to do a lot of things, trying to say all the right things. And then it's like you... then they start, their personality starts coming out, and they're like, oh man, why couldn't you have been this way since the beginning? And Scott's one of those guys. I mean, I remember in 2012 when I did something, the Social Media Garage, if any of you back in the day remember that. And my goal was to show, or the weekend was just to show how like accessible IndyCar drivers were. And I remember Scott was like pulling up in his golf cart, and I kind of flag him down, and he stops, and I'm like, hey Scott, can I get a picture? And he's like, sure mate. And I got a picture from him, and I was kind of surprised that he stopped and did that for me, because I didn't, you know. And it's like, now it's no surprise he'd do that, because we all know he's a super cool guy. It's a little like when you know, I remember back years ago, like Jimmy Johnson, and I remember like when he fell off, if anybody remembers when he fell off the top of a golf cart and broke his wrist or whatever, and people are like, no dude, Jimmy Johnson parties like crazy, or he used to before he got married, and they're like, Jimmy's a big partier, Jimmy's funny as hell, Jimmy's this, and it's like, really? And then over the last few years, we saw
some of that personality.
And it kind of was the same way with Scott. Maybe, you know, there's something to be said for focusing on making yourself into a championship driver, and then saying, okay, now I can, you know, now I'm a little bit older, and I can think about getting married, and now I can think about having kids and doing all that kind of stuff. Which, it's really funny, this off season and this season, the number of IndyCar drivers who are getting married or have been. Isn't
there
that crazy?
Are a lot. It is a lot.
Ferrucci said that he's
kind of wish that I would have like let everybody know that I play piano, because I could have cleaned up this off season.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Ferrucci's getting married next weekend.
Oh, that's right.
He said today, and Felix Rosenquist is getting married later on this year. Marcus Ericsson got married last year. Alex Palou got married and had a baby.
Yep.
Which, by the way, and this also is a testament to Dixie, is just how hyper-competitive he is. Mm-hmm. Because they actually had a diaper-changing contest at the shop the other day.
Hilarious.
Yeah. And, of course, Scott won. And it was like, you know, Alex was like, well, I was trying to go too fast, and I ripped the tape, and all of a sudden he goes, but Scott, you know, because he's just so, you know, meticulous and on point and everything,
like,
and it's
boop,
like, and he just got it done.
Boop, yep.
But he said, you know, that just goes to show.
I mean, that's just Scott. It's like that, you know, slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, I mean, and yeah, that's just Scott Dixon. I'm like, of course he won the diaper changing. Well, first off, he's got three kids.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of
practice.
His
last one was a boy, and you get real fast when you're changing a boy's diaper.
Yeah, I had two boys, so yeah, I know that.
Eight nieces and nephews, 4 and 4, and I was a nanny for 7 years for 3 kids, and I have never been peed on during a diaper change.
There you go. See, that's a claim to fame, actually.
Yes, it is.
It is, because I can't say that.
Yeah. I watched it happen to too many people, and I'm like, I'm a ninja.
Yeah. Yeah, cover that up.
Yep.
You just have to.
The other one ready just immediately.
So yeah, you're saying, but it just kind of goes to show that the series itself is kind of what's making it interesting too, is just the way the series itself is like the next wave of drivers are kind of maturing. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
they're not kids anymore,
right?
Kids are growing up.
Yeah, but even at a young age, I mean, you know, Dave first introduces everybody before the Q&A starts, and he's like, you know, I was really surprised that, you know, Pot of War, it's his fifth full season. Colton Hurd, I think it's like his fifth or sixth full season, but he also did some one-offs and stuff. So, you know, he's been racing since he was 18. Now he's 25. And,
right.
And it's so interesting to see like that, you know, Pelot's 26, two-time champion. He's only 26. So, you know, you're seeing this like next wave, and just crazy to think like Rosenquist is in his fifth year. Erickson's in his fifth or sixth year. Shit.
Yep.
You know, Newgarden's in his, what, 14th or something.
Yeah.
You know,
that's crazy.
13th or 14th. So it is crazy how, yeah, there's still some rookies that are knocking on the door, some young drivers that are knocking on the door. But, you know, when you look at like that wave of the older drivers that will probably be sunsetting their careers here in the next 4 or 5 years, Dixon and some of those other guys give it another 5 years, you still got a paddock full of guys who are 30 years old or less that are taking over. And, you know, I think it just, the competition level is just going to just keep going up as we go on.
I agree. Cause,
and really the more experienced guys, the better the racing.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't have guys doing dumb shit.
Exactly. Well, and you have that, you know, the close moves, the moves that, you know, just really grab your attention, because they can trust each other. And
yeah.
So they can race closer because they trust that the other guy isn't going to do something fucking stupid.
Right, right. And yeah, and when they do, they go and they, you know, they talk it over and they learn from it. And, you know, that's what I appreciate about this sport, is that everybody talks about, oh, we got to have rivalries, we got to have this, we got to have it. You know what? I mean, you know,
I mean, everybody's a rival on the track.
Yeah, like, I'd rather these guys, so, you know, I don't need to see, you know, fists flying and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah, no.
That's kind of fun sometimes, but, or it's kind of funny.
I don't want that to be the norm.
Yeah, I mean, I want these guys to actually go and talk it out, and because the big thing is you can always learn from somebody else.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and throwing punches and then, you know, saying F you to each other at the track the rest of the season just doesn't help anybody
learn.
No, there's
no place for that.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's like last year at Road America, you know, not Dixon's fault, but Power couldn't see. And all I know is he got hit and his car got, you know, annihilated.
Yeah.
And so he came out giving Dixon the double birds. I made a TikTok of it. You can check it out. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it was a double-double. He, you know, up and then again. And
which he's
like,
really
yes.
good at.
Oh, he's great. It's his signature. it's my favorite bird, actually.
And, might as well.
But, you know, afterwards, he was mad in that moment. You know, flipped him off, whatever. But then afterwards, you know, saw what had happened, got a rundown of like, no, this is actually the case, da-da-da-da. He had a conversation with Dixon, all good.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, man, sorry about that. Didn't realize, you know, whatever. I was mad. Heat of the moment. And, you know, Dixon's like, yep, not a problem. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's to
like,
be understood
sorry
sometimes.
You got collected in that. But,
yeah.
But
oh, here comes Ed Carpenter's guys walking by. Renus VK. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's just a, you know, kind of a first day of school vibe here.
It is, isn't it?
It just sucks.
Especially
now.
The new ones and the new fire suits.
Yeah, yeah, but especially it just kind of sucks though that the, you know, start of the season is still 2 months away.
I know it.
You know, but I've heard some people saying that there's going to be some testing going on and stuff like that, but I don't even know. Is there going to be a spring training? I haven't even heard anything about that.
You know what? I haven't heard either. I assume so, but yeah, no idea.
If it is, it better be streamed this year.
Right? No kidding. Maybe it'll be on
even
Peacock.
Even if it's just webcams, I don't care.
Right.
Just like they do for the Indie Next and all other kind of stuff, where it's basically stationary cameras.
Right, like, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, just, you know, not even, I don't even need announcers.
Need to be fancy, yeah.
I just need, oh, here we go. Rolling in the little carts. See, this is my first content day, so I'm kind of excited to see.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on.
And then there's Pato, who we tried to get on the show, but he's busy, which is okay.
We did. We should say hi to him though.
Because I didn't know how busy these guys are.
Hola Pato.
Hola Pato.
Bye.
Bye. So there's your cameo from Pato Award.
Yeah. By the way, I did. I spent some time in Mexico. So when Augustin Canapino was in, I don't know if you were there for that. When I tested out my Spanish, I was pretty proud of the fact I said adios.
Yes.
You know, the extent of the Spanish I learned while I was in Mexico. But
that's
and margarita. If that's even.
I mean, that's the same.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, and I got a thumbs up and a denada, so he must have been okay with my
accent,
pronunciation.
Yeah.
My pronunciation. So that's a good thing.
That's awesome.
Although I did say to him when I interviewed him last year, I said, you know, that I'd speak to him in Spanish, you know. Pero mi español es muy malo, and that made him laugh. So,
yeah. So
he must have understood what I said. So I've got that. I've got those couple phrases that I can use. So maybe someday we'll have to do an interview in Spanish with one of our Spanish speakers.
We might have to, or at least do a couple fun questions.
Yeah.
In Spanish. Yeah.
But you know what kills me is just the way all these guys. It's such an international series, and it's like hearing these guys. Because you know you have a lot of foreign journalists come in on Zoom and stuff, and just the way these guys can just flawlessly
flip back and forth, it's very impressive.
It's just like, okay.
It absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's unbelievable. Honestly,
I mean, as you can tell, I have trouble speaking English, so
right? Yeah, I have trouble with my primary language.
Yeah, I'm a writer, and it's like there was a movie way back in the day, and I think it was Better Off Dead with John Cusack.
Yes.
And the guy said, and John Cusack said, "It sucks, I'm failing English." And the guy says, "How can you be failing English? It's your mother tongue." And I'm like, we still fail it. I do.
Great question.
Yeah.
I'll let you know when I figure it out.
That's why I write, because, you know, I'm a little bit better at that.
That's funny.
But I'll tell you what, you know, continue the conversation since we got, you know, this should be, we could also, like, if you want to, like, say, you know, Fast Cars, Fast Girls, if we wanted a title sponsor or presenter, we could say presenter by the ADHD twins. Because
seriously, we're like squirrel this,
yeah,
that.
Because,
yeah.
You know, the tangents. If whenever you're sitting there listening, you're thinking, when are you guys going to get to the point to stick with us? We'll get there. So we're circling back.
We'll always circle back. I was going to say, yeah, because we talked a little bit about Andretti. With their team this year, and we talked about how it's three guys that, you know, are a little bit on the, you know, more, well, Herta's not super serious, but he's maturing. He's, you know, as he gets older.
But he's when it comes to at the track, he's pretty
serious.
He's
very focused.
Yeah, I mean, he's got his drums, he's got his outlets and things,
but like, he's got his own routine, he likes, you know, there's not a lot of room for extraneous bullshit
right
when he's at the track,
right?
And then Marcus Ericsson joining the team, and he very much has a, you know, a gravitas about him,
right?
And also the fact that they only have three cars, I think that's going to bode well for them. I think that all of those factors is going to bring a new level of focus to the Andretti team, because, you know, the last couple seasons with them having, you know, up to five cars, it's like, okay, you're almost fielding 25% of the field.
Right.
And, like, you're not doing that well, so maybe you need to hone it in.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you're spread too thin.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was part of the decision or not. That was just my opinion on it.
Well, and then last year, I hate to say, you know, they had a driver who probably, you know, he brought in a lot of money, but I think he took a lot of energy too. Just energy and resources and things like that.
Yeah.
What I find really interesting about Andretti this year is that they've gone from four cars to three, but they still retained all those people.
Yes.
And so,
which is good for them, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's wonderful for those people, and that shows a lot of loyalty from your employer.
And especially after losing a big-time pay driver and losing a big-time sponsor in DHL.
Yeah.
The fact that they kept that
they were together still able to do that.
is hats off to them for that, because that's a big deal. But
absolutely. We'll kind of see Ganassi when they cut down on their IMSA program and things, and you know, they were like, but we're keeping everybody, like, we're going to reallocate them to the NASCAR side or the IndyCar side, or mm-hmm. you know, but when they were changing things around. And I just, you know, I have a lot of respect for companies that do that, just because there's not, you know, it's not like when my grandparents were growing up and your company had your back, and
yeah,
you know, and they valued employee loyalty. And so it's nice to see that, since we're a small kind of niche market.
Yeah.
I like seeing that.
And so now you've got, you've just got extra manpower and women power, to be added to that, you know, that three car, team with three very, very talented, very focused drivers.
Yes.
And so, but you know, one thing I mentioned to you earlier that I like about the three guys is that their personalities are really the same. And so I don't think there's going to be some of the extra stuff that has gone on, you know, within that team and within everything. And I think it comes down also to what I liked about what all the drivers said, but they're like, you know, because we're similar, we're focused on team success as opposed to us success, and that's what you need to be successful as drivers, and what you need to be, you know, to be successful. You know, like we said minute ago, Penske. They, you know, like, Roger doesn't care who wins,
as long as it's somebody on his team. Like,
yeah,
it's good to have that mindset, because I guarantee your boss has that mindset.
Right.
You know, like, a team win is, yeah, they don't care which one of you wins.
Right. And so to take that attitude, and all three of those guys have that, I think that, you know, because let's not forget, I mean, Kyle Kirkwood had some forgettable weekends. Not all of them were his fault. But he won twice, you know, and he won... he raced well at the 500, and so, you know, they've got guys who can, you know, and Felix just, I mean, he didn't, you know, he was knocking on the door to wins. I mean, he got some poles and he drove really well certain times, and it just didn't work out for him. Mm-hmm. So, so, you know, it's just like that, you know, oh, I'm sorry, Marcus. I was, I'm thinking Rosenquist.
Yeah.
Marcus, my bad. Again.
I mean, both
again,
both came in the same year.
Yeah.
Like, what are the odds?
Yeah. Well, we're sitting here at a window that's overlooking Victory Field, and I did see a squirrel down in the grass. So, so that, you know, is me. But you know, yeah, I mean, all three of those guys, you know, probably might have deserved some better results last year. Although, you know, I did say in the blog, I think Herta is kind of in a bit of a show me season, because, you know, he makes a lot of money, and there's mm-hmm. talk of him going to F1. Although he kind of shot that down a little bit, which was surprising. He said, you know, there might be a time where is a time to discuss it. Sure, I might be too old, or I might have, you know, because obviously in Formula One, you know, you've got their 25-year-old world champion mm-hmm. two or three times. How many times Verstappen is one in a row.
Right.
You know, you have him already talking about retirement. You know, F1 is a young man's game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, IndyCar isn't. You know, when you look at how a lot of guys don't really peak, or you've got rookies coming in, you know, Blomqvist is 30, and you've got a lot of guys that have been, you know, who are older and who are experienced. And so,
we just don't really have the culture of, you don't expect a young rookie to come in and dominate unless they've really been a superstar up to that point.
Right.
You know, we don't necessarily expect a lot from our rookies just because it is a lot of different types of driving.
Right.
And a lot of that, you just get better with experience.
Right.
You know, we've got small ovals, we've got big ovals, we've got road courses and street courses. And, you know, to do all of that different stuff, you know, there's just no other way to prepare for it than to do it.
And I think, like a lot of drivers, the biggest surprise they have coming in is just how difficult the cars are to drive
physically,
because of no power steering.
Mm-hmm.
That's something Blomqvist said when he was in there, and he said, you know, the other cars, you know, he said, you just twitch the wheel and the car reacts. And he goes, the thing with Indy cars is, like, you have to manhandle it, you know, especially, you know, you're talking a 1,600-pound car with, you know, 1,000, 1,500 pounds of downforce on it or something like that. I mean, that is, you know, when I was a kid, they were just going, I'm so old, but when I was a kid, they were just going between, you know, non-power steering, power steering cars. I drove cars without power steering, and, you know, at 3,000 pounds, whatever a car weighed back in the day, yeah, you had to really muscle that thing around. So mm-hmm. when you take the weight of the car, the amount of downforce on it and stuff like that, yeah, you are going to have to wrestle the hell out of that thing. And that's I think, the biggest adjustment that drivers got to make when they come here is just, it's not a, you know, you've got to wrestle with the car, but you have to drive it with precision. And that's a balance that takes a while to master.
It does.
And, you know, like you said, you have to have fast hands and you know, you don't really have to worry about it. You don't really see, you know, you see like the in-car of Pato just zipping his hands back and forth. And you really don't see a lot of that in other, you know, types of series, because they're just making, even when the car is a little squirrely, all you have to do is flip it a little bit. In any car, you're like jumping on, you know, you're like Steve Irwin jumping on top of a crocodile.
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, and you're doing that at 200 miles an hour. So, I think the level of expectation that you know, we as a fan base or owners or whatever have for guys coming in is just a lot different than it is
in other sports, and even in other motorsports.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
I would say I also learned to drive in a car that had no power steering, and yeah, it is a whole different beast.
Yeah.
It really makes you appreciate power steering, that's for sure.
Yeah, and
it's not easy. Well, saying it was an Edsel.
Yeah.
It was a giant-ass car, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I don't know if I've ever driven an Edsel. I've driven a lot of things.
1959 Edsel. So, fun fact of how we got that car. My dad and I ended up working on it together and restored a lot of things and did a lot of work under the hood. Left everything factory on the inside, except we added seat belts because Mom wasn't having any part of her babies riding in a car with no seat belts.
Absolutely.
And it was a 59, so it predated seat belts.
Yeah.
My mom actually got that for my dad because my dad loved old cars and liked working on cars as an anniversary gift one year.
Yeah.
And she had no idea how rare Edsels were or anything about it. She just saw an old car that was for sale and bought it.
Yeah.
And then just parked it out front, put a bow on it.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, I'll make another obscure movie reference. Peggy Sue Got Married.
Yep.
From the 1980s when she goes back and you know, goes back in time, and her dad pulls up in the driveway and she starts laughing hysterically and goes, "Daddy bought an Edsel, what?" You know, because they ended up being such awful cars.
Right. You know, it's funny, since I learned how to drive one, I've always had special love for Edsels. I'm like, they get a bad rap.
Yeah.
Like, I loved that Edsel. It was cool. What year would it have been in high school? I think it was my sophomore year, that prom, that post-prom party was a 50s theme. And so the junior class, I was a sophomore, the junior class is who were in charge of like prom and post-prom and the theme and all that business. So I like went to who was in charge of it and I'm like, yo, we own a 59 Edsel. Do you want me to just like park it in front of the door so that everybody walks by like a legitimate car from the 50s as we're coming into this 50s post-prom? And they were like, do you mind? I was like, no.
No,
like,
it's cool.
I was like, it won't be there till I'm there. Like, I'm not going to, like, finagle. I'm like, my dad's going to be asleep at, you know, by the time post-prom starts. Like, he's an old man, but I'm like, it'll just be my ride, but I'll just park it right up on the sidewalk.
Yeah. And
we did, and it was cool as shit.
Yeah.
People were taking pictures in it. I rolled the windows down, like, left it unlocked. I'm like, people want to get in and take photos, and
so, just yeah. Don't climb in the back seat and
yeah, I'm like, just do anything. Don't do any of that business.
Yeah, no. It made for a good story, but no.
But no.
No.
But
no. But so, you know, a couple, are there any, so we were talking about teams, but are there any drivers that like kind of intrigue you going into this year? I have one in mind.
I mean, Santino Ferrucci always intrigues me just because he's kind of a wild card and he's got good instincts. He's got quick reflexes and I feel like he's got a lot of potential. And especially showing what A.J. Foyt did at qualifications for the 500. I mean, the rest of the season was very A.J. Foyt.
Yeah.
I would love to see that change, but they came out the gate swinging for qualifications for the month of May.
Yeah.
And they honestly did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And so I really want to see a repeat of that this year. And, yeah, I would love to see Santino walk away with a really good finish at the 500 for AJ Foyt Racing.
Yeah, and their alliance with Penske is crazy interesting. And
it's only going to help them.
Yeah, and Santino said, you know, it was really interesting when you hear about, you know, friendships / relationships that you didn't expect. But
mm-hmm.
Santino, you know, said that he and Will Power really are good friends. You know, and he said, I talked to him a lot, and yeah, I think the opportunity to be in the same room with those guys a lot is going to also help Santino. I mean, everybody's got his opinion on him, but you can't deny the fact that if he's in the right situation and on the right day, you know, I think that. You know, he's proven he can win the 500.
Mm-hmm.
He's proven that. So,
he's proven that he knows how to avoid fuckery during the 500 also.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's skill, but that also is a little bit of lady luck in
yeah.
there also, just because, you know, it's not easy to do.
Yeah.
And he has honestly, a great sense of humor about it. You
yeah.
know, the bill that he sent the IMS for cutting the grass, like, that's hysterical.
Yeah.
Like I love that side of him.
Yeah, and I think yeah, to have the opportunity to you know, be in the room with those guys, talk to them, see their professionalism, see, you know, mm-hmm. everything that goes on with Pence, you know, like he said, it's really intriguing because if you remember back when whenever it was that Joseph Fallon hit his head at Iowa,
yeah.
and Santino was a Penske employee for a couple of days.
Yes.
And you know, so he talked about a little bit about that today, and he said he referred to them as Mr. Cindric and Mr. Penske, you know, and mm-hmm. just so yeah, so I think he has some very deep-seated respect for them, and so I think, yeah, I think that will help them, and that alliance had better help Foyt. I mean, I don't know where else they can turn if they can't
right.
work this out. And also, you know, I mean, I'm going to throw out a little bit of a conspiracy theory here, but, you know, was the alliance part of just trying to save that team? You know? I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm just, you know, making shit up at this point.
Yeah, I mean.
But I mean, they weren't going to last much longer on their own. You know, and at least
I mean,
I don't
not
think.
Not without a change of
yeah.
some sort.
Yeah. And not without a serious influx of money.
yeah.
Which I still don't think has come yet, because they were still, you know, he was still in a Sexton Properties fire suit. Stingray Rob has his own personal sponsors that he brought with his money, but
which,
overall,
you know, I live in a Sexton Properties apartment.
Oh, okay.
My complex is actually owned by Sexton Properties, so you'll hear me say this many times throughout the season, that every time they get into a crash, it raises my rent.
Yeah.
So every time an AJ Foyt car crashes, I'm like, damn it, my rent's gonna go up now.
Well, and especially that one thing Santino said that was
that
interesting.
That does not actually happen. It's just a joke.
Yeah. But one thing Santino said that was interesting is he said, we're hopeful for a full season. So, you know, he kind of threw that little caveat out there to say.
So he's probably still searching money.
Yeah. And so, which brings up the, you know, Benjamin Peterson situation, which was interesting.
Very.
You know, the term.
It just cracks me up. The contracts only matter when it matters to the team owners, but they mean nothing on the driver's side.
Right. Like, I mean, you look
it makes no fucking sense.
You know, you look at you know, what Connor Daly went through last year. You look at, you know, Peterson and a lapse in contract, which I'd have to think has to do with you have to meet certain maybe financial obligations by this date, or, you know, but yeah, you're right. It's like they can fire guys, they can, you know, just not bring guys back. But then you look at you know, Alex Palou being sued for tens of millions of dollars because, you know, he did what was best for him. The teams can always do what's best for the team,
exactly, but without any recourse whatsoever, without any repercussions.
Right.
It very much feels like playing slots in Vegas. Like, the house always wins.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just...
Which is bullshit.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And that's why always in the past, you know, drivers were so reluctant to say they were hurt or to say they were whatever. And you know, you look at, like say a sport like baseball, where contracts are guaranteed, you know, and a guy'll say, you know, I'm hurt, or I can't play today, or I can't do this or that, because, you know, the team owes them the money regardless of what happens. So it's not like if you're a player at whatever level that, you know, you get hurt for 2 weeks and somebody else comes in and gets hot, but it's like, oh, well, you know, we're going to go with this guy.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. We could have an entire podcast about that, so we better not even get started.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've got lots of opinions about how all that goes. yeah. Number one being that exact scenario is what created Oliver Askew's whole CF.
Yeah.
Because it creates an atmosphere of don't ask, don't tell, and you don't want to be honest about injuries because you don't want somebody else to take your job.
Right.
And it's like it creates a community of distrust.
Right.
To run things like that.
Yeah.
That's as much as I'll say today.
Yeah. And as we're approaching an hour here, I just do want to mention that one person was very absent, unfortunately, this week, and that's Simon Pagenaud. Heartbreaking. So, Simon, if you're listening, wishing you the best.
We miss you.
We do. We do. I love the guy. Just
great,
you know,
personality. So much fun.
Yeah, and I'll always remember talking to him back in Toronto in 19, and I just remember saying something about asking him, you know, he's doing really well in the championship, and I asked him something about the championship and his confidence level, and he goes, well, why shouldn't they be confident? I won the Indianapolis 500. And
yes.
I'm like, yes, you did.
Yep.
Yes, you did.
He did the May sweep.
Yeah. So Simon, guy, you know, get well if you're still recovering. If not, hope to see him, you know. Hey.
Hope to see you driving anything. Hope to see you do it actually, if that's what you want to do. Hope to see you just living your best life.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Whatever that means.
Absolutely. And if so. And maybe, you know, there's a lot of talk about some, you know, one-offs for the Indy 500. He wouldn't be too bad of a guy to give a call.
He'd be a great one-off.
if he's ready to go, maybe you know. Honestly, Meyer Shank's already got their third card spoken for Indy.
You never know. It ain't May yet. Lots of things can change.
Yeah.
I actually thought yesterday, you know, because he was my guy, I'm gonna have to pick a new favorite.
Yeah. Well, so. you're welcome on the Alex Palou bandwagon.
I mean, I do love Alex Palou. but I feel like he's almost gotten to the point that, you know, like, a lot of people love Alex Palou because he does really well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, granted, I have been a fan of him since he was a rookie. I actually chose him as a rookie in our fantasy league.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I did really well at this year.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. So. In fact, Mike actually won our fantasy league that we do. It's not a public league, so sorry, guys. He split the meeting Mike was not able to be present at the draft, and so he asked me to draft his team. So my team did horribly, but it shows that I am capable of choosing a championship-winning team.
Well, just not for myself. When you're talking about team wins, that's like a team win.
Yeah. So
you know, but when you get me Power Palou and Rossi as three of my picks, and the thing is with that league is that there's like no limit on how many people you can use. So. You know,
I had
the number 10 in my lineup every race.
Yeah. All right, we should wrap this up again. Make sure you check out everything on social media. Mike will be starting to use the official Fast Cars, Fast Girls social media as well.
I have the password.
He's got the passwords. And then, of course, you can find him on Twitter and on Instagram at 15 Days in May. But all the Fast Cars, Fast Girls stuff comes straight from our website, fastcarsfastgirls.com. It links to everything, or just search Fast Cars, Fast Girls. We recently have a new Threads account, so for those of you that are no longer using the artist formerly known as Twitter.
Just like the Sears Tower, it's still Twitter to me.
Exactly. I'm not going to fucking call it X. I'm not going to do it.
No.
Yeah. First off, X is one thing, and it's a drug.
Or a movie rating.
Well,
that too.
If I'm just saying, like, if I'm just referring to X as like a singular thing, I'm talking about a drug.
Yeah.
So if you ever hear me say X is
Kids who are listening, drugs are bad.
I didn't say they weren't.
Okay. Just wanted to
just clarify. Yeah.
People run with, you know, in this day and age, people run with you know, things. It's right. It's just like it's just like Pato Award's comment about you know, taking 2 weeks off from Chasing Tail today that took on a life of its own. Thank you, Jenna.
Yeah, it's like just let people have funny comments.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't be that person.
Exactly.
But yeah, so make sure you check everything out. We're on Threads now. Haven't posted a ton there, but that'll pick up. We're excited for the season. We're going to do another episode next week because Mike and I are both going to the Rolex.
Woo-hoo!
So we'll kind of...
Florida, here we come.
Yep. Get ready for us.
You know what? We could almost have a third host if I could get Kevin.
Oh, okay.
To come on for a few minutes.
Yeah, that would be fun. So, I'd be all about it.
Because he would definitely, you know, as livened up as the show is right now, he would probably add another layer to that.
I would love it. So, I'm going to actually get a blog post out about how to do the Rolex for a first-time camper. So
yeah. Well, I'm like a half first-time camper since I...
Oh, that's
I
true.
Only, you know, I sort of... You know,
staying unintentionally camped.
Yeah, I just kind of showed up, and you guys said, "Hey, you just want to
make yourself comfortable, and you just stayed."
Yeah, one thing I will say, and put this in the blog: if you're gonna fall asleep, like if you're just gonna like buy a couch at a thrift shop and bring it with you and camp, if you're gonna fall asleep like right before sunrise, turn it so it's facing east,
mm-hmm.
because. I fell asleep at about 5 a.m. This was back in 2020. I fell asleep about 5 a.m. The thing was facing east. Oh, I'm sorry. Turn around so it faces west. The thing was facing east, and I slept for about 4 hours, and I woke up with a massive sunburn on my face. So, you know, just a little bit of a...
If you're going to sleep through the sunrise, then you do not want to be facing the sunrise.
Yeah, exactly. Because especially if you...
It'll be dark when you go to sleep, but
yeah, and especially if you've gone through a Midwest winter and your skin is kind of virginal. Yeah, the Florida sun is just gonna hit
it'll get you
a truck. So,
it sure will.
So you know, yeah, the one thing, and you know, you can add that.
Definitely will. I say it's on my list. Say sunburn and windburn are both possible there.
Yeah, yeah. So. And bring a coat. Bring a winter coat because.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got a whole list of. Yeah.
Bring a winter
whole
coat.
Whole section on clothes.
Bring a headlamp so you can see in the fog.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my mom got us all for Christmas this year beanies that have a headlamp on them.
There you
go. I'm so excited about it.
But we're not gonna give away the secret of getting on the Ferris wheel at midnight. That's pretty awesome to be up in the air like that when the fireworks go off. Oh wait, I should say no. I should say that's a shitty time to be on the Ferris wheel,
well,
right?
No, they can get on at midnight.
What's that?
They can get on at midnight.
Yeah,
fireworks are.
Yeah. Okay. So get on the Ferris wheel at midnight. It's really awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening. And have a great week.
Awesome. See you guys.
Oh, shit. That was hilarious.